Welcome to Prison Pipeline, produced at the studios of KBOO Portland. I'm Karen James. In the United States, medical examiners and coroners have used excited delirium to explain deaths in police custody, even though excited delirium is not a valid or recognized medical diagnosis. Physicians for Human Rights, a global organization that works at the intersection of medicine, science, and law, undertook an investigation to evaluate the history, use, and validity of the concept of excited delirium. In March 2022, the organization published its report, which found that excited delirium has racist origins, lacks a scientific basis, and should not be used as a diagnosis or cause of death. We'll hear a presentation by Joanna Naples Mitchell, co-author of this report, who reviewed her findings at the 2024 Law and Mental Health Conference organized by Mental Health Association of Portland.
My name is Joanna Naples Mitchell. I'm the U.S. Research Advisor at Physicians for Human Rights. I'm also a lawyer and one of the principal authors of the report I'll be presenting to you today, Excited Delirium and Deaths in Police Custody, the Deadly Impact of a Baseless Diagnosis. Now, this is a report that Physicians for Human Rights released back in March 2022, which unfortunately still has a lot of relevance today. Though I will say, I'll be walking you through all of the changes that have happened since this report came out, and we've seen a lot of progress. Physicians for Human Rights is a global human rights organization that works at the intersection of medicine, science, and law. We have a long history of working on deaths in custody around the world. In the wake of the Black Lives Matter protests in the summer of 2020, we saw an urgent need to examine the role of physicians in facilitating impunity for deaths in custody. We undertook this research to evaluate the origins, history, use, and validity of the concept of excited delirium as a diagnosis and cause of death. Excited delirium is a concept without a clear definition. It's most frequently used to explain a death in police custody of someone in an agitated state. In recent years, more than 100 people, disproportionately Black men and other people of color, have had their deaths in police custody attributed to excited delirium. Some of their names are likely familiar to you. They include Angelo Quinto, Manuel Ellis, Daniel Prude, Elijah McLean, Zachary Bear Heels, and Natasha McKenna. And you may recall in May 2020, as Minneapolis police officer Derek Chauvin fatally knelt on George Floyd's neck, his fellow officer Thomas Lane could be heard saying, "Roll him on his side, I just worry about the excited delirium," or whatever. Multiple studies have found that the term excited delirium is disproportionately used to explain the deaths of Black men. Berkeley Law and Bioethics Professor Osagie Obasogie found that from 2010 to 2020, of at least 166 people reported to have died from excited delirium, 43.3% were Black. This is likely only the tip of the iceberg, as multiple studies have found that more than half of police killings are not counted. Another study found that excited delirium was associated with the use of restraint, so someone being held down in a position that likely could affect breathing, in some 90% of all deaths. Now, it's important to note, excited delirium is not included in the International Classification of Diseases or the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders. It's also not recognized by the American Medical Association or the American Psychiatric Association, and yet it persists. And I'll note that was true even at the time that we published our report. We've seen a lot of other medical associations change their positions since our report came out. But even at the time, AMA and the APA already taken a clear stance that excited delirium is not a valid entity. Now, as I've kind of alluded to, there's not one agreed upon definition of excited delirium, which is why it's such a problematic concept. Just one example of how it's been defined is, quote unquote, a state of extreme manual and physiological excitement, characterized by extreme agitation, euphoria, hostility, exceptional strength, and endurance without fatigue. So now you'll see on the screen a number of the experts who contributed to our report, which brought together people from a range of medical specializations, including forensic pathology, emergency medicine, internal medicine, psychiatry, neurology, cardiology. Multiple attorneys, including myself, helped contextualize the findings of the report, but we had no influence over the medical findings or conclusions. The physicians on our team conducted an in-depth review of the medical literature, and then the whole team reviewed historical documents, including hundreds of pages of news archives and deposition transcripts, collected by the report co-author and civil rights attorney Julia Sherwin. We also interviewed 31 people, including physicians, lawyers, crisis response experts, and most importantly, family members of people whose deaths were attributed to excited delirium, namely the family of Angelo Quinto and Daniel Prude. So you'll see on the screen now some quotes from the news archives in Miami in the 1980s, which is where the term excited delirium was first coined by forensic pathologist Dr. Charles Whetley. He first used the term in case reports relating to cocaine intoxication, mainly in men, but then extended this theory to 17 Black women in Miami who died after consuming small amounts of cocaine. Now, for more context, Black women in Miami were showing up dead, all in the same neighborhood, in various states of undress in the late 1980s. Dr. Whetley's office was investigating what was happening. Many of these women were presumed to be sex workers, which led Dr. Whetley to hypothesize that for some reason, the male of the species becomes psychotic and the female of the species dies in relation to sex. I'll just leave you with that for a moment to process that this is a doctor who is putting forth a theory like this. And this is where excited delirium comes from. And he uses the word species. He's talking about Black women specifically. What is he saying? So when a 14-year-old girl was found dead in similar circumstances, but without any cocaine in her system, Whetley's supervisor reviewed the case files, and he found that all the women had actually been murdered. Investigators eventually found a serial killer responsible for the murders of as many as 32 women. It's important to note that he found signs of asphyxia, that the women in many of these cases had been unable to breathe, which is often the context, too, in which we're seeing excited delirium coming up today. One would think that Whetley's grave mischaracterization of these women's murders would have discredited his parallel theory of male death from small, non-lethal amounts of cocaine, this theory of excited delirium. But instead, he was able to continue to insist on the excited delirium diagnosis and it being something particular to Black people. He told a news magazine, as you'll see on the screen, 70% of people dying of coke-induced delirium are Black males, even though most users are white. Why? It may be genetic. So now we have a timeline that traces how excited delirium went from being something that was incorrectly applied to Black women who were murdered to something that's widely disseminated in the medical and law enforcement communities. And this is a span of about 18 years. So physicians began to push this diagnosis while serving as legal defense experts or researchers for law enforcement agencies or Taser International, the weapons manufacturer. They also published studies examining the role of restraint in deaths in custody and actually hypothesizing that certain amounts of weight applied to the backs of healthy individuals would not restrict breathing. They did studies looking at this, and PHR examined them and found that there was no evidence that they actually sought institutional review board approval for these studies, which is key because no institutional review board would actually approve a study that would permit the application of weight on a healthy subject's back in a way that could actually endanger their life. So these defense experts were doing these studies, trying to determine, excited delirium is this valid entity, right? We think people are spontaneously dying in custody when restraint's being applied. Look, the restraint couldn't kill someone, but there's no way an institutional review board, an academic institution, would ever approve a study in which one could prove that restraint could kill someone. So there's all of these questions around the experts who are actually pushing this diagnosis and what their motivations might be. And there are these obvious conflicts of interest I've mentioned with Taser and law enforcement and serving as defense experts. This is one key example. In 2005, one defense expert, Dr. Vince DiMaio, and his wife wrote a book called Excited Delirium Syndrome. In 2007, the company Taser purchased more than 1,000 copies of this book and distributed it and other materials on excited delirium to medical examiners and police chiefs. Taser purchased enough copies of this book to cover the entire forensic pathology community multiple times over. Many of these experts also co-authored a 2009 white paper published by the American College of Emergency Physicians, which promoted excited delirium as a cause of sudden death. As a result of publications like this white paper, Excited delirium has come to pervade law enforcement policies and training manuals. It's also gained international reach, including in Australia, Canada, and the United Kingdom. I just wanted to pause for a moment on the book Excited Delirium Syndrome I mentioned, which for many physicians, law enforcement experts, likely was their introduction to the concept. We have here on the screen the cover and then the dedication of this book, which states, "This book is dedicated to all law enforcement and medical personnel who have been wrongfully accused of misconduct and deaths due to excited delirium syndrome." I've shared this with physician experts who worked on this report, who have been appalled at the obvious bias that informed this book, which was then distributed under the guise of being an academic text, an objective text, informing physicians and others on excited delirium. So now I'm going to cover the findings and conclusions of our report, which led us, you know, in reviewing the medical literature, reviewing this history and the way that excited delirium has spread, and then also consulting all the experts I mentioned, that excited delirium cannot be disentangled from this fundamentally racist and unscientific history. So first of all, there's a lack of scientific data on excited delirium. The body of literature supporting the diagnosis is small and of extremely poor quality, with homogeneous citations rife with conflicts of interests. It's extraordinarily self-referential. These defense experts I mentioned are constantly citing each other. And in our interviews with clinicians and scientists across disciplines, there was no consensus on the definition of excited delirium. Excited delirium has also been disproportionately used as a cause of death for Black men. And the signs and symptoms making up this diagnosis rely on racist tropes. And I'll note that these specifically come up in the white paper I mentioned by the American College of Emergency Physicians, published in 2009 by a number of experts who had undisclosed conflicts of interest, but then later adopted by ASEP's board. This white paper posited that individuals with excited delirium have superhuman strength and can become impervious to pain. So what this does is this pathologizes resistance to law enforcement, suggesting that it's in fact not a human response when one is being held down in a position that restricts breathing to fight back. Also plays into tropes that people of color are more likely not to feel pain, which is a problem that really has pervaded the medical profession for over a century in the United States. And frankly, puts people at risk if someone is in an agitated state and encounters law enforcement. How are law enforcement going to respond if they think, oh, this person has excited delirium, look, they're exhibiting other signs and symptoms of it, and therefore they're likely to be super strong, they're likely not to feel pain, and in fact, using normal kind of restraints to subdue the person while we're waiting for medical care will not be effective. We have to increase our use of force. That's essentially what this American College of Emergency Physicians white paper implied. So it's extraordinarily dangerous. For all of these reasons, Physicians for Human Rights concluded that excited delirium is not a valid medical diagnosis, and it should not be used as a cause of death. Now, I'm going to spend some time going over how the field has changed since we published this report in March 2022. We've seen an extraordinary number of policy changes coming from this report, the associated advocacy, and frankly, the work of partners and others over the course of decades. What our report essentially did was aggregate the literature, the history, expert views on excited delirium, building on pushing from families for decades, from plaintiffs' attorneys, from other advocacy organizations, and really tried to basically prompt a sea change in how the medical profession and law enforcement are thinking about this concept and thinking about mental health and crisis response, since we do see this concept most often arising in the context of an individual who is experiencing some kind of mental health or substance use crisis and is at risk of complications if they're subjected to force, as anyone would be, but they might perhaps be at heightened risk and not able to communicate effectively to protect themselves. So when we produced this report, we called the medical associations and law enforcement to affirmatively disavow this concept. Following the publication of our report, all the organizations you see on the screen took the position opposing the use of excited delirium. I want to pause on a couple of them. The American College of Emergency Physicians, which I've mentioned, also the National Association of Medical Examiners. So these are the two organizations that at the time that we produced this report had previously published position statements, position papers, laying out the grounds for excited delirium as a valid concept. The ASEP one is the most recent one, the 2009 one. The one that named the Pathology Association produced was older, from 2003, but they had never affirmatively disavowed it either. Prior to the publication of our report, we reached out to both medical associations saying, we're going to be publishing this report on excited delirium. We're curious what your current position is. Do you have any comment? And the National Association of Medical Examiners, in fact, already began to take a step back and said that they saw that older paper as no longer valid, whereas the American College of Emergency Physicians kind of doubled down initially. They had published a more recent paper that basically put out a new theory around hyperactive delirium with severe agitation, a new concept that was much more nuanced than excited delirium and had, you know, all sorts of protocols for caring for individuals, responding to individuals in an agitated state. But importantly, it explicitly stated it was not a refutation of the earlier 2009 paper. The reason this matters is because, well, for several reasons. So first, of course, as I mentioned, there are a lot of concerns that this paper has been informing law enforcement crisis response and perpetuating ideas that someone who is in an agitated state is essentially more dangerous than they may appear and therefore should be subjected to greater use of force. That's the first piece. But also, this paper ends up informing court decisions and the admission of evidence on excited delirium in court, which has led to impunity for deaths in custody. We looked at the case law on excited delirium and found that courts have admitted testimony saying, oh, this person who died in custody was exhibiting signs of excited delirium. So they would have died anyway. They would have died spontaneously because medical associations recognize the concept. Specifically, courts have cited the National Association of Medical Examiners paper. They've cited the medical literature and they've cited this ASEP white paper from 2009, which is the most recent one. And so we really wanted to see ASEP take an affirmative position that whether or not they have a more recent, more nuanced paper, this 2009 paper is invalid, should not be cited in courts anymore. It should not be cited by defense experts. So after the report came out, we met with both organizations, encouraging them to put out official public statements reversing their previous endorsement of excited delirium. It took some time, but finally, in March 2023, NAME published a statement changing course saying, although the terms excited delirium or excited delirium syndrome have been used by forensic pathologists as a cause of death in the past, these terms are not endorsed by NAME. Around the same time, in April 2023, ASEP finally published its own statement saying, ASEP does not recognize the use of the term excited delirium and its use in clinical settings. I will say that was progress. We were really happy to see that. But ASEP still at that point had not gone as far as actually rescinding its 2009 paper, which had these harmful descriptors of what someone with excited delirium would allegedly, how they would allegedly behave, which puts people at risk. Over the course of last summer, there is a remarkable grassroots effort by members of the American College of Emergency Physicians to push the organization to adopt an official policy rescinding the 2009 white paper once and for all. We saw individual chapters of the Emergency Physicians Organization adopting resolutions saying that they wanted ASEP to disavow it, which led in October 2023 to ASEP finally rescinding the paper after a vote by its membership and then by its board, which was a really important sea change, meaning that at that point, there was no major medical association left endorsing the concept of excited delirium. Around the same time, state legislatures had begun to look at this issue. And specifically, California, led by Assembly Member Mike Gibson and the family of Angelo Quinto, ended up passing the first law in the country banning the use of excited delirium in the context of death investigations, law enforcement, and courts. And this was just around the same week as the ASEP, this ASEP sea change in terms of finally rescinding the 2009 white paper. We see this happening. So at that point, there's really a sense of momentum. And that's where we see, you know, all these other associations I've got on the screen here, a lot of these position statements come out. Some were trailblazers and came before. The American Academy of Emergency Medicine put out an extremely, extremely thoughtful statement last year. The Bay Area Rapid Transit Police Department, back in August of 2022, was the first law enforcement agency that we're aware of that changed its position on excited delirium after our report came out, put out a press release saying that they're not no longer going to be using the term in their law enforcement reports. And this led to other law enforcement agencies also considering this. We saw this happening in Colorado statewide. Colorado actually now too has passed legislation and several other states are considering it. But after the ASAP position changed, and we also see it from the first kind of private company that's been doing trainings on excited delirium, Lexapol, which we also see on the screen. So we're at this point now where there is this domino effect, and the fact that there's no major medical associations left endorsing this concept means that law enforcement are reconsidering it, legal professionals are reconsidering it, and are educating themselves. And we've seen bills now pending in Hawaii, Minnesota, and in New York, where I'm based as well, and where PHR is headquartered. Now, I'm ending with the most boring slide of all of my slides, but essentially I'm laying out kind of where our advocacy is and where we want to see more changes going forward. So with medical associations I've mentioned, we really do see the sea change now. There's this medical consensus that excited delirium is not a valid entity, should not be used as a diagnosis or cause of death. And where we want medical associations to keep moving is to educate their membership about these really important policy changes. Because, if their members continue to use these terms, terms like excited delirium or equivalent terms, then we're not going to see progress, right? And this will continue to lead to impunity or possible danger for people who are in crisis. So we really encourage medical associations to educate their members. Law enforcement, Physicians for Human Rights is planning a lot more outreach to law enforcement agencies to educate them about the harms of excited delirium and also talk through like, what should crisis response look like, right? You're interacting with someone who's agitated, who's in a mental health crisis. How to ensure this person gets the medical care they need and has a medically informed, scientifically based crisis response. We're also educating legal stakeholders, like I mentioned, doing public education and media. We have a website with the organization Campaign Zero and exciteddelirium.org, which is a resource page you can go to that will, can be used to share with other experts in this field or other physicians, law enforcement, legislators who might want to introduce legislation on this. And then we're speaking at conferences like this one, trying to get the word out, working closely with affected families on further legislative advocacy. And one thing I'll say is, excited delirium is a symptom of the intersection of law enforcement, racism, and medicine in this country, going back to slavery, slave patrols, kind of scientific racism. There are so many issues that go beyond excited delirium that it's emblematic of. And there is certainly a risk that other terms could come out that could be used instead, that could replace it. Certainly, we want to see a lot more medically informed crisis response led by social workers, physicians, health workers, rather than law enforcement. But I think now, because there's so much attention to excited delirium, there also will be attention and more eyes on any future terms that proponents try to put out to replace it. And I hope that this sparks conversation at this important conference about what kind of crisis response do we want to see for people who are using substances or experiencing a mental health crisis and shouldn't be at risk of death in custody just because they're not getting the help they need because we don't have the social safety net that we should have in this country. How do we protect them and ensure that any deaths in custody are not attributed to something that does not exist and that there is accountability when force is used against people who are vulnerable or anyone, frankly. So that's where I'll leave things. I really hope that physicians, policymakers, and others will do their part to ensure that medical terminology is not used to absolve police killings of people of color. Thank you so much.